What's up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
And we've got a special bonus episode for you here with two fantastic guests. We're talking to you, two of the folks behind the great book from Dark Horse Comics, American Caper. Ladies and gentlemen, Laszlo and Shelley Bond, welcome to the podcast.
Hello.
That makes it sound like we're married.
Laszlo and Shelley Bond.
The Bond family is here.
I mean, now I'm going to get in big trouble with my husband and my son and our two kittens.
Well, kittens are going to give you trouble?
No. Don't they always?
I mean, Shelley and I are both married, but we ride around on a private jet funded by the U.S. government. It's got a bedroom. that was a reference to our previous Department of Homeland Security person.
I understand that. It's an interesting way to start a podcast. Keep going.
It's an interesting way to start some Senate testimony as well.
Exactly. I will have to say there's days that I talk to Shelley more than my wife because she has been instrumental throughout this whole process of a couple of guys that have, you know, worked in games for a bunch of years, stepping into the comic books world. So she guided us, and it's I talk to her a lot.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say a lot. And also, listen, I have been in the industry for 3 decades. I'm pretty selective about the projects that I pick up as a freelance editor. So he might try to compliment me because he's obviously looking for something. But legit, if I don't see something there, whether it's a tiny crystal or a glimmer, I'm not going to hang around for 18 months. So there was a reason I stuck around with this book. And I think Laszlo and Dan have created a pretty fantastic world here.
So actually, before we get too far, we should probably establish what American Caper is. We've been talking about every issue on our Stack podcast. We've really been enjoying the book,
really like,
but there are so many wild things that are going on here. To start with, you're focusing on two families, two very American families, one that I guess I would describe as hitting hard times. They're not having the smoothest journey possible right now. Mm. And then another one that seems to be your prototypical American family. But of course, neither of them are either of those things and are all of those things at the same time. But that's just kind of like your starting point to the first issue, and things spin off into wildly violent, nudity-filled, profane, very adults-only things going on here throughout the issues. And I'll also plug, before I forget later, that American Caper number 5 is coming out March 18th, so more wildness to come. But where did this start with? I believe this is part of a larger Absurdiverse, Laszlo, that you guys have going on, that you're building out. So where did the germ of this come from? Because by the time it's hit comic book form, there are so many things. It feels like it's just like already the ball is rolling down the hill.
Well, thanks for the kind words. Firstly, just to clarify, American Caper is its own universe. We have a thing called the Absurdiverse, which is, we're working on some interesting stories. We like doing animation and games. I was just asked by Chris Anderson the other day about including some stuff from that other universe in Verona and our story of American Caper. It's like, no, we don't cross universes. Okay. So Absurd Ventures was started by Dan Houser and myself and some colleagues that we used to work with at Rockstar Games. And we wanted to create new universes and tell stories in them. So we've currently got 3 different universes: A Better Paradise, the Absurdiverse, and then American Caper. And we're often asked about American Caper. It's like, oh, is there going to be a game set in this? You know, I love the Wyoming setting, and it sort of feels like a cross between GTA and Red Dead. And it's like, no, we're not currently planning a game. There might be something in the future. But it all began when Dan and I were talking about the things that we love making. Obviously we love making games, but in those games we had satirical radio and satirical TV shows. And in Red Dead Redemption 2, there were old timey cartoons, you know, that felt like they were from 1907. And so when you're making open world games, you're very much making media universes. And we've always loved comic books. I've been collecting since I was 5 and have a sea of white boxes I don't know what to frankly do with. Dan's from London, and he was into the comic scene over there. And so he's like, I have this idea about, it started with the Mormon Hitman. It started with the Mormon Hitman, and then he started throwing out ideas for other characters. And one of the things that people have said to me about the comic is, I don't know where it's going, but I like it. You know, like you mentioned, you have these two families, a van crashes full of prisoners on the run, as well as some migrants that had escaped from Mexico. And then it just turns into this sprawling sort of tale that you don't really know which character. You know, the main characters in the two houses, but there's people in that van that, you know, many issues later, you're following them and seeing how they're tied into the deeper backstory.
Yeah, I mean, every issue I'm struck by how dense it is. Like, there's just so much going on, yet you're able to tell each sort of scene or each bit in such a discreet little moment. You're creating these moments so it doesn't feel like I'm like, oh, I don't know exactly what's happening. I'm like, oh, I know exactly what's happening in this moment. And you string them together like beads. What do you credit that to? Like, how did you get to, how are you packing so much story in here?
I've got one word answer for that. It's talent. And it's the right combination of people at the height of their powers, people like David Lapham, who I've been quoted as saying he's the greatest American storyteller of my generation. And I will say it again and again. He just is. Stray Bullets changed my life. And he is what I think every cartoonist aspires to, certainly in the indie world. But it's a combination of the right people at the right time and an idea that is just batshit crazy. And so we have Dan and Laszlo to thank for that.
I mean, Shelley, just to keep with you for a second, Laszlo, as he was saying, obviously you guys are comic book fans, but actually getting into the meat of writing and creating the comic book, you certainly, there's nothing against you guys, but Shelley, you certainly have the experience with crafting that and the background with editing. What is involved when you're sitting down with them the first time or taking a look at their script for the first time and breaking that down?
Well, you know, to be honest, Laszlo came into the equation a few months after I was hired and started working with Dan. And it's interesting, you know, obviously I've been freelance editing for 6 years and I run a boutique publishing company with my husband. So I have to be really selective about how I spend my time. And unless an idea really knocks me out, really hits me in a way that I really haven't been shaken up before, I'm probably not going to invest the time into it. Because a lot of people think making comics is easy. And I have to say, and Laszlo, I can quote you on this, because you had said you didn't realize just how hard it was to make comics. It is incredibly hard. The percentage of error at every stage as to what could possibly go wrong is unbelievable. So yeah, when I was first brought in to take a look at the pitch, I really thought it was something that would have been easily a part of my editing repertoire at Vertigo before I left the company, you know, and that to me is something I don't see anymore. So right off the bat, Warped Crime Caper, I knew I was intrigued, but it's editing today as a freelance editor, you have to be really specific in how you customize your skills and how you work with the people around you. Not a gamer. I was like straight up to Dan. I said, look, I played Rock Band and I played Guitar Hero. My son is a drummer, but I never played GTA. I heard all about it because my kid was obsessed with it. when we first moved out to LA in 2014, all he wanted to do was go to Santa Monica and like check out the locations. So
because he'd seen them in GTA 5. And mm-hmm. and I think it, sort of to Shelley's point, we've done a lot of storytelling in games. And the parallel that I will say is that games require a lot of characters, you know, a huge, vast area, a lot of characters. And then as the player who's sort of new into this world and this place, you go interact with all these characters, and then there's everything sort of crosses over and becomes connected. So you asked about sort of the density. You know, Dan and I are used to pounding out a lot of dialogue. You know, games require a ton of dialogue. We had in Red Dead Redemption 2, there were 500,000 lines of dialogue. We didn't write all of those. But you know, you're creating a world with NPCs and side characters and side missions. And so, you know, Dan had this idea in his head and wrote that first script and started working with Shelley. And then I came in and became the producer and co-writer on the next few issues. But the issue that we run into a lot is, you know, we've written a ton of copy, and Shelley's like, you're going to cover up all the art with all of this, but it's better to write more than you need and pare it down. But I'll also say that making games and just as in making the American Caper, it's such a collaborative process. It's not just a script handed down on high. And frankly, the notes that we get from Lapham and Shelley are extremely additive. So Dan will write the script. I'll add scenes and dialogue and then send it to Shelley and David to get their feedback. And there's, you know, about 40 bullet points of feedback.
Give or take a dozen.
And then and then I'll do a rewrite and an edit, and then send it to Dan, and he does an edit. And then sometimes we'll do a live read and live edit session of it. And then it starts going through the pipeline.
We brought in David Lapham to help with the front end, basically, because when I started with Dan, what I realized was he was very used to writing audio scripts, and they were terrific. I mean, there's so many that he has such a killer cadence. There were so many great money lines. The characters themselves were just so messed up. I mean, I've described it recently as like a wrecking ball of hypocrites and losers. I mean, what more could you want?
That's how we describe our podcast as well.
Right? Okay. So we're in good company. But I think what Laszlo and Dan were quick to realize, obviously you need great world building in games and in comics. But in comics, you also need to have a really strong visual acuity. Because what we need to do as editors is show the writers how to take their dialogue and narration and how to work transitions, incorporate it on the page, and then move it forward. So that, to me, is fascinating. And that's how I adapted my editorial skills to working with Dan and Laszlo. I pretty much was all in on the concept. I mean, a Mexican beauty queen on the run, who, by the way, I was told was going to be one of the main heroes of this book. And that's another reason why I joined the cast, because that, to me, was a point of view we need. And frankly, I was also really impressed with how, as Laszlo will say, a bunch of guys, a bunch of dudes who make video games were actually super smart and didn't just bring me in to be the token female component of American Caper, but they actually really wanted my point of view, because there are a lot of female characters. And as you've noticed, there's been some male nudity, which, by the way, I am so impressed that there hasn't really been female nudity, but there was absolutely male nudity with Marty's scrotum. I haven't seen that in comics. So talk about talk about game people understanding like how you make a splash in comics. Like to me, I couldn't ask for too much more.
Yeah, I think I the first male nudity in a popular video game was another scene that Dan wrote, which was in Grand Theft Auto, The Lost and Damned, where there's a politician in the locker room, and that was sort of like a oh my God moment. And yeah, that Marty scene, it really makes me laugh having this character who's a billionaire, you know, buys a ranch to go play cowboy, is so obsessed with not growing old and is shooting up all sorts of hormones and is complaining that his business descends too low, which we will come back to that issue in a later issue. So, well, you know,
I just have to interrupt by saying, come on, he refers to his members as the boys. Now, seriously, and I mean that, like, you just don't find that stuff in comics every day. I mean, it's hilarious to me.
And so many comics have, you know, and I read all kinds of comics, but, you know, we didn't want to go with the sort of typical gratuitous nudity and all that. And Shelley's been, listen, we hired Shelley because she brought to life some of our most favorite books over the years. And when we started talking to people in the industry, her name came up, and she's a bit brutal, but the best kind of producer or slash editor is someone who's honest and pushes you to have the best result.
Well, and I really appreciate that you and Dan have really welcomed all the red ink. And, you know, let's face it, there's no time to waste in monthly comics. You know, I've been a fan of the monthly comics since I picked up my very first comic in 1988. And if you really want to prove yourself through story, you have to deliver every 30 days. And I think the art of the monthly comic is, I don't want to say it's dead, but it's on life support, because a lot of people just can't hit their marks. And the point is that the reader comes back to the comic book store or places their order to get that monthly rush, something they can count on. And, you know, to me, that's what's sad about the comic book industry. So I'll tell you one thing, you can bet that these issues are going to be in your hands. We're delivering where we said we would. So March 18th, Alex, you said that's when issue 5 comes out. You bet. And that's one of our most exciting issues to date, because issue 5 is going to give you the most hideous, scary, badass backstory of a character that you've already known and loved for 4 issues.
Yeah.
You are not going to see it coming, and you are not going to believe your eyes.
Yeah, I'm curious, Justin, what character you've sort of gravitated towards or that you hate the most.
I mean, I definitely don't hate any of them. I love all of the that's why I was talking about the density and jumping from different points of view, being able to be with the couple that is just, I'm like, this is the most doomed situation I've ever seen maybe in a comic. But it also feels like these people are real and they live in the middle of America somewhere.
Yeah. Are you referring to William and Marnie? Or are you referring to Orson and Eliza? Two William different doomed couples.
Yes, yeah, so I guess that's fair. Everyone's a little bit doomed.
Marnie is obsessed with the conspiracy theories, right?
Conspiracy theories. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. First of all, my wife's name is Marnie, so I don't appreciate that. Second of all...
There's a world of opportunity out there, beyond the typical 9-to-5, where purpose and grit come together, where the American spirit and ingenuity are welcomed in places that could really use your skills and your experience. We're talking about the Peace Corps, with volunteers living and working in communities around the globe. It's been called the toughest job you'll ever love. Tough because it asks so much of you to dig deeper, get your hands dirty, to go that extra mile, to rise to the occasion and meet challenges head on. And the love part comes from being part of something bigger than yourself, from building bonds that last a lifetime. It's knowing your hard work transformed lives, including your own. After 65 years, the Peace Corps is still the toughest job you'll ever love. Explore opportunities in more than 60 countries. Learn about benefits and apply at peacecorps.gov/serve.
She is the character that I gravitate towards the most because she is the one that, first of all, I love my wife, but second of all, she is the most real, I think. She, right. Like, they're all real, but this is the one, to Justin's point, where it's like, for anybody who hasn't read the book, she is online all day, like most of us. She's doom scrolling. She's getting deep into forums and conspiracy theories. By the time we get to issue 4, she's texting with somebody that she really should not be texting with, for sure. I mean, I guess we'll see how it goes. Maybe she should.
Oh, but and her best friend is an AR-15.
Yes.
Let's not forget that. She's toting weapons constantly.
The thing that I'm most curious about with her, though, and I think this is true of the entire book, is maybe this gets to your point about like actually hitting a monthly schedule, is you're dealing with real things that are actually happening in America right now. That is usually incredibly tough to do on a comic book release schedule. So how are you making sure, particularly at the pace where, not to speak out of turn, absolutely bonkers things are happening in America every single day, and by the time we get off this call, 5 more things will happen. How do you make sure that it's still reflecting the world outside in a very hopefully prescient way when you're at the very least working a couple of months behind, if not longer?
Well, that was always the challenge with the games that we worked on, because those are very much a satire of America in a certain time and place. It was a bit easier with Grand Theft Auto Vice City because that was set in a fictional Miami in the 80s. GTA 5 was set in modern day. And so you're working for years creating satire when, as you said, things change constantly. And
specifically, sorry to interrupt you, but erasing satire. We're not going in a way where it's easier to be satirical. It's much harder because we're moving in an insane, absurd direction, regardless of your political point of view.
Well, yes, and we've definitely had situations where we'll come up with characters and, you know, funny ideas, and then a year later and we're still in production and those things sort of come true. We had a character in the Grand Theft Auto universe who was an action star and a reality TV star that decided to run for governor of our fictional California in that game. And we wrote these campaign ads where he came out and talked about how he hated crippled people. He hates old people. And it was just the most ridiculous, you know, over the top kind of thing. And then, you know, you cut to later and it's like, wow, you never thought this would come out of politicians' mouths, and they're saying some of the craziest things. But I think since you've read issue 4, you can see one of the things that Dan and I are really interested in with storytelling is when you have an extreme character, you know, an extreme crazy liberal or an extreme crazy conservative or a person who's extremely religious. It's interesting to see the path that sent them on this. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to have a bit more, compassion for them because you can see the choices that they made to get to this point. And that's one of the things I like about issue 4 is that you see this couple that moved to Wyoming. You see them in Chicago when Marnie was a progressive and a health nut and running marathons and all this. And then you cut to where we met her in issue 1, she's shoving bear claws and drinking, you know, gallons of iced coffee and just in a rage on her computer. And it's those flawed characters that are fun to write and explore.
Well, and it also, you're not condescending. You're sort of just being like, this is a person, this is our character, and this is also a real person. I feel like you're drawing that type of switch. Sounds insane when you highlight it like that, but that's such a thing that's happening now, where people just fully flip-flop on all of their beliefs and values because of the internet.
And we're living it. And I think that's what makes a series like this really stand out, because I think everyone on this team, Dan Laszlo, David Lapham, Chris Anderson, who is adding so much of that
darkness,
crazy, dark and warped sensibility. It's got to go for broke now because of the world we're living in. And I think all of these characters, we've either become a little bit like them in our lives, or we know people who have become them. And it's frightening, so we might as well laugh at ourselves, because we'd go insane if we didn't. And I think that's the joy of working on a book like this.
And we tried out a lot of comedy in there too. Yeah. You know, it's one thing to have this sort of, you know, dark and violent story, but there's the comedy aspect of it. So you've got, you know, comedic violence, but also we've always made sure, I mean, this is, when I say we, I mean, this comes out of Dan's storytelling and where the characters that he comes up with, the direction that they go. We always make sure that awful people in the stories, that bad things happen to them. So, and
sometimes good things, though. I think that when you have an ensemble cast, I think what makes it really intriguing is when you have shifting alliances that are not arbitrary. And I will tell you, that was the joy of working with Laszlo and Dan and the team for the past year and a half. We had a long lead time. So to your point, Justin, you know, obviously we have to be aware of what's happening politically and socially. But, you know, I think we can all agree that in the world we live in, we got a taste of this 8 years ago. We saw and knew it was coming back. So it's been challenging, but not impossible to imagine things that could be even worse.
And I also point out that we try to show extremism on all sides. And that is one of the sort of the throughputs, is that the internet is pushing people so far over the edge, and it happens on all sides of the political spectrum. And but also to the, you know, there's just a list of, there's some people that are fun to make fun of, you know, like the setting of Wyoming and Montana, which Dan and I have spent time there. There's an interesting sort of clash of cultures. You know, when people from Hollywood and then people from Wall Street sort of discovered that area, they came in and bought up ranches and started playing cowboy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's another character that we're yet to introduce that you'll probably see, I think in 9 is where they first appear. That's completely out of left field. And yeah, it's David and Shelley sometimes would say to Dan and I, like, you're introducing new people. You got to kill more people off and kill them off faster. And frankly, there was a couple of characters that were slated for death that we decided against. And that's the fun of working on this ahead of time. And we've been able to go back to previous issues and make some tweaks and changes because we're not up against really insane deadlines. We had 3 issues of this book done before we even signed with a publisher. We were just making it.
And that's because they brought me on board, and I still follow the tried and true rules that were imbued in me from the very early days of my time at Vertigo. You know, you really don't want to solicit or talk about anything until you have 3 in the drawer, in air quotes. And it works when you stick to your deadlines and you have someone on your back who says, let the page go. You have inked it enough. You know, you need to proofread the lettering. That's what an editor does. You know, an editor comes in and does whatever's necessary. And now in the modern age, customizes her skills to get the best out of everybody. And hopefully that's what you'll continue to see with American Caper, because we're just getting started. You know, we're not even at the halfway point of the first year. And wow, you see how crazy it's become.
Well, yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I'm struck by both the collaborative and sort of the auditory nature of the way you work, which feels like very different from most comic book creators we talk to. And Alex and I come out of the comedy world. Actually, my buddy Jim Santangeli is a voice in Red Dead 2, who absolutely loves being in that. But that's like that auditory, like, oh, what about this? What about this? It adds the layering. I feel like that speaks to what I was asking earlier about the density. The tricky part is, how do you know when it's done? How do you know when you're like, all right, someone has to draw this. It has to be made. We have to get it. It's finished.
That's when the editor has to kind of come in and say, you know, it's due. Let's move it forward. This is great. You know, one of the hardest things to remember about making comics is that you should start small and finish them so you can get to the next comic. And I think a lot of people make the mistake of wanting to break into the business. And that's big companies, or that's students. You know, I teach comics editing. And I think, you know, what I hear most often from students is that they've got a 160-page original graphic novel script they'd like me to read, and they have no credits. And I don't know if they can write or draw. So you really have to be honest about your limitations, and you have to put your ego at the door. That's the other thing that a lot of people at corporations who think making comics might be just an easy way to get a feature film made. You know, you have to be realistic, and also listen to the people who actually rolled up their sleeves and put in the hard work and the heavy lifting, maybe a little bit longer than you, which again, egos clashing in entertainment, it's not anything you haven't heard before. But this team is solid, because everybody has a respect and a trust for everyone else. And that is rare in comics today.
And you have this, you know, this story that was in Dan's head, and then we work on a script. And to me, what the difference between, you know, when we put in some art notes about, you know, we think that they should be in this location and that, you know, so forth, but it's not like a lot of the comic scripts that I've read where the writers are, you know, very, very prescriptive. Lapham takes that story and puts the characters in places that we didn't think of. He has action and blocking that we didn't think of. And it is such a crucial element. And then, you know, sometimes when we get to the lettering, this was happening yesterday because we were working on the lettering for 10, is we've got three empty panels with not enough dialogue for those. But Lapham had laid an interesting scenario out. And so then we're, you know, writing more dialogue right there on the spot and dropping it in. So it's been an exciting experience, and also very terrifying, because I always say video game fans are one level of nerddom, but comic book fans are a whole other level. And it's been really heartwarming to read how much people love this book. It's made me really happy as someone that, you know, goes into a comic book store every week throughout, you know, high school and college. And it's also gotten me back into buying way more comics than I should be buying.
Seeing your name in lights on the cover of a comic, there is no greater rush. I just want to walk back for one second and just say, look, the greatest thing I did as the editor on this book was to bring David Lapham on board in the front end of the project. And my husband, who was eavesdropping on my conversation when I was first suggesting that to Dan and Laszlo, you know, my husband was like, what are you doing? You just talked yourself out of a job. And I'm like, oh, no, I know what I'm doing. Because there's no one like David Lapham. He's story and art and he's storytelling. And he really is the maestro. And I mean, what was Stray Bullets but a warped caper? So I think what you're seeing is a masterclass where everyone in this team, and it's a big team. It's like a traditional comic book where we've got Nate Picos of Blambot, you know, super popular, talented letterer. We've got Lee Lowridge on color, one of the masters of palette, you know, especially limited palette. He brings more ambiance and nuance, I think, than just about any other colorist in the business. And, you know, we mentioned Chris Anderson. We've got Tyler Boss on covers. We have Simon Bisley, variant cover artist. And, you know, we've got this great team that isn't afraid to work together and to pass the baton and do their parts. And to me, that's the best of monthly comics.
Yeah. I love hearing all of this, by the way. I mean, you touched on this earlier, but we talked to a lot of people, and I won't call out any names, but often you get with these sort of projects, you hear video game guys are on a comic or movie guys are on a comic, and you're like, I know what's going on here. You're just using the comic. It's proof of concept to sell and up the chain. But hearing you guys talk, it's kind of fantastic to hear that Laszlo from your and Dan's end, that you clearly have been impacted by the process of creating these comics and are approaching it a different way. And obviously, Shelley, you're keeping it on track. It also explains something. I was at Comics Pro a couple of weeks
yeah.
back.
And yeah, I was there.
We were both there too.
Well, I'm sorry, I missed you. In the Dark Horse presentation, I'll be perfectly honest, when the slide came up about American Caper, it was like this MCU timeline, but just for the one book leading into the trade. And I was like, huh, that's interesting. You normally see it like, and we're launching American German Caper and also this and all of these other projects. But it's very clear now that your whole point from that was, we're on schedule. We're ahead of schedule. We know what we're doing. There's a plan for all this stuff.
Totally. And yeah. I think the other thing I didn't get to touch on, and I apologize, you know, there's always so much to say about comics, and I'm just such a fan of the art form. I mean, that's why I'm still here in comics. You know, I love it to death, but it's words and pictures. And I think even though Laszlo and Dan come from a very visual world, what I think people don't understand about making comics, and it's because editing isn't what it used to be. My goal was to get Dan and Laszlo to understand the economy of space on the comic book page. You know, you can be a wonderful writer. I mean, look at Alan Moore. I mean, his scripts were rumored to be 100 pages, you know, long for an issue. That's really not acceptable for anyone, maybe other than Alan Moore and two or three other people, right? But the thing that I wanted to do when I was brought in was make sure that they knew the nuts and bolts behind the scenes of how to make a comic. And that involves cutting your darlings and coming up with transitions from panel to panel or scene to scene, knowing how to use them, because of course their transitions in video games are very different and film transitions are different, but we have a similar language. And again, yeah. That's why we all worked so well, is because there was not just one ego here. We all have our own giant egos, but we all leave them at the door and we all want to work together to create the greatest story. I mean, that's what it is at the end of the day.
The other thing I'll say is, you know, to your point, Alex, about, you know, when you see someone's like, oh, this person's from this discipline and they're going to make a comic, or, you know, I myself am also skeptical about that. But every project that Dan and I have worked on together, we've been creative partners for 25 years. Everything from we should do a cartoon that you can watch inside the game, or, you know, we should do radio that you can listen to as you're driving around the car in the city, or any of that stuff that we've created, or, hey, we should do a comic book. There's never a discussion about if we think this is going to make money, or could we turn this into a film. We literally never have those discussions. It's like, you know, he has an idea and says, hey, it'd be fun to do this. That would be cool. And we go, yeah, let's do that. And then we go make it. And, you know, it was one of the we didn't want to have to get permission from a publisher and like show them a pitch or whatever. It's like when we started talking to all the publishers from, you know, Image to DC to Marvel to everybody, it was like, well, we've already been making this thing, right? Mm-hmm. We just we're spending our own money making this thing, and we think it's fun, and we think it's pretty cool, and it's a compelling story with a lot of different conflicted characters, and so, you know, we just sent those first few issues to Dark Horse, and they were clearly the best partner for this book, and have been extremely supportive. But you know, going back to the sort of the characters and the story, I like that we have. And it's what's going on in modern day is everybody's in crisis. Like this is too much. This is, you know, we're all overwhelmed. And I was thinking about, you know, we've got this story about these escaped, these people that sort of fled Mexico, and they were being smuggled in this van, and they think that they're, you know, coming to this better place in the United States. And what happens? These three guys that had just escaped from prison hijack the van, drive it to Wyoming, and smash it in between two houses because Eva, after being told that the driver tells her to pee in a jug, and so she just smashes him on the head with a jug of piss and causes the van crash. And that was not, by the way, that was not in the original script. We were talking with David and said, hey, we need to have Eva somehow make this van crash. And he's like, you just wrote this whole conversation where she's arguing with these guys that have sort of kidnapped them and want a woman to basically go to the bathroom in what's a gallon milk jug. He was like, you should totally have her bash him over the head with it. And I was like, bro, you are on board. I wish we were working together in games.
I mean, well, that's the thing. When you hire the right people for the job, you get magic.
Yeah. I could talk about all this forever, and I have a million other questions about like form and stuff, but in the interest of not making this a 3-hour long podcast, since you did bring it back to the comic, and we do have issue 5 coming up. What can you tease about that? What can people expect from American Caper number 5?
5. And I've really wrestled with whether we should have swapped 4 and 5 or maybe put 5 earlier on, and came to the conclusion that no, it is the right place. There is a massive reveal about a character that so far seems quite quite innocent, if you will, but their backstory is extremely insane
and bloody.
And that's what I've loved throughout this process, is it just keeps getting crazier and crazier as you reveal who these people are, and introducing new characters that are very extreme. So I can't tell too much about 5 without really without spoiling it, but I will have to say we've internally always called it the women's issue, because it follows really gets into the story more about three female characters,
and there's a Lamborghini in it.
Yeah,
all right. So, I wasn't on board until I heard about the car.
Something Lambo, for the boys, something right? for the girls.
Right? Definitely. There's glamour and there's gore.
Excellent. Well, it's got everything then. Shelley, Laszlo, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for chatting. We've really been enjoying the book, and I'm looking forward to the next one and coming out every month here on in.
Yeah. Long monthlies.
Yeah, 12 issues. People sort of told us we were crazy. They said, oh, people just do 4-issue things now. And when he said, well, we can't tell this story in four issues. We'd struggle to tell it in eight. And in fact, I don't know, this may be a spoiler, but at the last issue, we just keep adding pages. So like it's going to be, that's going to be a thick issue. Because everything comes together, and you know, we've got plans for other stories in the American Caper, you know, universe. Like this story does not end in this first volume. Our hope is to keep on, because you know, that's what's fun about coming up with these insane characters is you think, oh, we should definitely, you know, we should not kill this person off so that we can do some more storytelling with them. But a lot of people probably will die.
Yeah, there are people to kill anyway, as happens, you know, in the world we live in. But thank you so much for having us. It's really been a lot of fun, and hope to come back on the show sometime.
Yeah, please. For sure.